man who never turned up for orientation at the University of Montana is found, but he did not survive a car accident. Good evening, I'm Christopher Allen.
And I'm Conrad Scheid, and that's our top story this evening on Montana Evening Edition. We'll also tell you why some Bozeman residents are suing over the city's new non-discrimination ordinance, and MSU Northern has a new interim chancellor.
A California man who went missing while traveling from his summer job in Idaho to the University of Montana died in a car crash northeast of Boise. Custer County Coroner Vicki Armbruster says 21-year-old Lucius Robbie of Orleans, California, died on August 19th of blunt force trauma that happened when his car went off Highway 21 and down a 60-foot embankment. A private helicopter hired to join the widespread search for Robbie spotted the tip of a kayak in the trees near the Stanley Lake turnoff on Thursday. Robbie left Horseshoe Bend on August 19th to travel to Missoula to attend classes at UM. He was reported missing when he didn't arrive for orientation on August 20th. The Idaho State Police is investigating the cause of the crash.
Five Bozeman residents are suing the city, the mayor, and city commissioners, arguing the city did not have the legal authority to enact an ordinance that prohibits discrimination based on a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. The complaint, filed in district court, asks the court to declare the non-discrimination ordinance invalid. In June, Bozeman became the fourth Montana city to pass a similar ordinance banning discrimination in the workplace, housing, and public accommodations. Deputy Mayor Carson Taylor, who is named in the lawsuit, said he doesn't think this decision was illegal. Both sides say the court's ruling will have implications for similar laws in Missoula, Helena, and Butte.
The dean of the College of Technical Sciences at Montana State University Northern will serve as interim chancellor after the resignation of Chancellor James Limbaugh. MSU President Waded Cruzado says that Greg Kegel is a natural choice for a leadership position and will serve in the post for the, quote, foreseeable future, unquote. Kegel began working at Northern in 1982 as a professor of industrial technology and design drafting. He was named a dean in 2001. He's worked to expand Northern's technical programs, including introducing internships with national and international businesses, and helped secure more than $5 million to build Northern's Applied Technology Center. Kegel says he's humbled and honored to be asked to lead Northern. Limbaugh resigned effective today, saying controversy over several issues on campus and in the community had become a distraction.
A former administrator in the Billings School District has been sentenced to 6 years of probation after pleading guilty to stealing electronics and selling them at pawn shops. The Billings Gazette reports District Judge Ingrid Gustafsson gave Dulce Fate Whitford a 6-year deferred sentence for one count of felony theft by common scheme. If she meets the conditions of the sentence, including paying $16,600 in restitution, the felony can be cleared from her record. Whitford pleaded guilty in May to stealing laptops, tablets, and other technology equipment from the district between June 2012 and November of 2013. Prosecutors say she used the proceeds to gamble. Public defender Edward Werner said Whitford was having financial problems, partly due to a family illness. As director of Indian Education for All, Whitford was paid $94,000 annually.
Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Amanda Curtis was in Missoula yesterday, presenting a 6-point plan that she says would help Montanans struggling with student debt. After her prepared remarks, Curtis spoke with Edward O'Brien about a variety of topics, including conservative criticism, her family's association with an organization some say has radical leanings. First, though, Curtis offers her assessment of the campaign building effort.
I can pass along that we have hired a campaign manager. We have amassed a team of people who are experts in their aspect of campaigning. And everywhere we go across the state of Montana, we are blown away by the encouraging grassroots support that this campaign has generated. Folks are fired up and ready to go to get a 34-year-old woman teacher in the U.S. Senate.
How is that translating in terms of fundraising?
You know, I was told early on that if our campaign could raise $100,000 by the last day of the month, someone somewhere might take us seriously, and we are at the $200,000 mark.
Debates. There's some shaky information, maybe a debate in early October, maybe not. Other than that, no debate so far. What do you think about the situation, and is anything settled out here?
Well, I've got an anywhere, anytime, philosophy about debates. I can't wait to get Congressman Daines in front of Montanans talking about the issues that are important to all of us and asking him to defend the terribly wrong votes that he's taken against us and our families.
Chief among them would be what?
Voting to raise the taxes on the middle class. Specifically important today would be voting to slash Pell Grants, voting to raise student loan interest. I could go on and on.
CNN Politics had an article this week. It was entitled, Montana's, quote, refreshing, close quote, candidate needs more time. Did you happen to see that?
I didn't see it.
It's noted a little shaky yet on major issues like Iraq and immigration. What would you say to that?
I would say that you guys have to understand that I'm a high school math teacher and I've been on the campaign trail for 11 days. And when I said that I was going to travel across Montana talking about issues that are important to us and listening to what Montanans were asking for from a senator, I have done exactly that and will continue to do so. And in the end, when I make my decisions, every decision I make will be based on what's right for Montana.
It also noted conservative criticism of your family's association with the Industrial Workers of the World movement, which has an aim to take possession of the means of production, abolish the wage system, and live in harmony with the earth. Tell us about this organization.
There is a clear distinction between millionaire Congressman Steve Daines and working class teacher Amanda Curtis. I stand for working Montanans. I will be the voice of working Montanans everywhere I go, every day of my life, and I'll continue that in the United States Senate.
But I think the critics would say that sounds like contemporary communism.
I stand for working Montanans. I will do what's right for all Montanans on this campaign and in the U.S. Senate.
Is it bad to be a millionaire?
It is not bad to be a millionaire. Congressman Daines is out of touch with what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck, and Montana has a chance to stop sending more of the same to D.C. and put a couple of folks in there who really understand what it's like to scrape to put food on the table.
State officials say Montana ranks in the top 5 states for employment growth, but it faces slower growth in the future as an aging workforce retires. The Department of Labor and Industry's Labor Day report released today shows that since the start of 2014, about 12,000 jobs have been added in the state. Montana Labor and Industry Commissioner Pam Busey says that number puts the state on pace for record-breaking employment growth this year. The report also says the unemployment rate has dropped steadily since 2010. Currently at 4.6%, it's the 11th lowest in the nation. Businesses will need to make investments so workers can increase their productivity, the report says, in order to counteract worker shortages and slower job growth after 2015.
An organization based in Red Lodge wants to help military service members and their families transition from active duty in the U.S. Armed Services to life as a civilian. This means finding a home and a job. According to the latest figures from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the unemployment rate for veterans who've served since 2001 was about 9% in 2013. That's slightly higher than the average rate for that year of just over 7% for that year. As Jackie Yamanaka reports, local Elks Lodge and the community of Red Lodge are hosting a 2-day workshop to help veterans get a job or transition to a new career.
Red Lodge is the only official Yellow Ribbon community in Montana. The designation means a South Central Montana town has committed to work proactively to connect and coordinate all agencies, organizations, resources, and employers to support service members and their families. Waureen Wall is one of the founders and co-chair of the steering committee. She says the organization found veterans in the area had no comprehensive program to help them transition from active duty into the civilian job market. So they, along with the local Elks Lodge, created one.
It is very difficult for most service members to translate their skills and experience from serving in the military to the civilian market. So that's why the skills evaluation is so important, because we help them to do that. We take the skills inventory that they provide us, and we translate that into things that are going to be very recognizable on a resume to civilian employment.
At the first workshop held last May, attendees came from across Montana. One traveled from Utah. The second workshop will be held September 27th and 28th in Red Lodge. She says trainers will work one-on-one with participants to prepare their resumes, practice job interviews, and talk about how to search for jobs. They'll also be given resources, including businesses or industries that are reaching out to hire veterans.
We don't guarantee them a job, but we're preparing them to look for a job, a new job, or even perhaps start a new career.
Funding for these workshops comes from an impact grant from the Elks Club nationally. Because of the grant, there is no cost to attendees for lodging, meals, the training, or materials. Wall says their only expense will be to travel to and from Red Lodge. The workshop is capped at 10 participants. Jackie Yamanaka, YPR News.
For information on how to sign up for the Veterans Education and Job Training Program, call 406-425-3429.
For the third time this summer, Yellowstone National Park rangers have cited a tourist for illegally flying a drone in the park. Park officials said Donald Criswell of Malala, Oregon, flew an unmanned aircraft over Midway Geyser Basin and near a bison herd on August 19th. In early August, rangers charged Theodorus Van Vliet of the Netherlands after his drone allegedly crashed into Grand Prismatic Spring. Andreas Meisner of Germany is accused of flying a drone that crashed into Yellowstone Lake on July 17th. He was charged earlier this week. The Jackson Hole News and Guide reports Grand Teton National Park has had at least one drone citation. Rangers say a man crashed a drone into a tree in late June, possibly while trying to get aerial photos of wildlife.
The State Department of Fish and Wildlife will suspend its hunt for three more members of the Huckleberry Wolf Pack for the Labor Day weekend. Hunters contracted by the state for the past week have been trying to kill a total of four members of the pack in order to protect a herd of 1,800 sheep the wolves have been preying upon. One wolf was shot and killed by a hunter in a helicopter on August 22nd. The state says at least 24 sheep have been killed in eight confirmed wolf attacks on the herd in southern Stevens County since August 14th. Officials for DFW say that they have suspended efforts to hunt or trap the wolves in order to avoid conflicts with Labor Day recreationists and grouse hunters.
A 32-year-old Billings man is charged with luring another man into a downtown alley and raping him. The Billings Gazette reports Waylon Jace Iron was arrested Wednesday night and made an initial appearance in justice court yesterday on a charge of sexual intercourse without consent. Justice of the Peace Pedro Hernandez set his bail at $50,000. Iron's public defender's request for a lower bond was denied. Charging documents say Iron told the man he was a Bureau of Indian Affairs officer and offered to take him to an apartment for beer. The man told police Iron pulled him into a dumpster enclosure, and after he refused Iron's advances, Iron raped him. The man said he was able to get away when Iron passed out. Iron denied knowing the man or having any physical contact with him.
A Montana judge has sentenced the leader of an interstate drug ring to 20 years in prison for his role in a trafficking operation that stretched from western Washington to the Bakken oil fields of the Northern Plains. In a sentencing hearing today, U.S. District Judge Susan Waters described Robert Farrell Armstrong as a longtime criminal and a danger to society. In a deal with prosecutors, the Moses Lake, Washington man pleaded guilty in January to a single count of possession of methamphetamine with intent to distribute. Waters said Armstrong preyed upon addicts in the Montana-North Dakota oil patch to build up a network of dealers and armed enforcers. Authorities say the drug ring moved as much as a pound of meth a week before it was busted up last year.
In the forecast for our listening area, west of the divide tonight, expect partly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and isolated thunderstorms. Lows in the upper 40s to mid-50s. On Saturday, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms, highs in the mid-60s to lower 70s. In central Montana tonight, there will be increasing clouds with scattered rain showers after midnight, lows 50 to 55, and expect gusts of up to 35 miles per hour after midnight. On Saturday, there will be mostly cloudy skies. Rain showers are likely through the day, and there's a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, high 65 to 75. And in southwest Montana tonight, look for increasing clouds with scattered thunderstorms in the evening and scattered rain showers through the night, lows 45 to 50. On Saturday, look for mostly cloudy skies. Rain showers are likely, and there's a chance of thunderstorms as well, high 60 to 70. And now for the editorial comments of Sarah Howell.
Thank you.
The last 3 weeks have been difficult ones. In fact, the last several months have been difficult. From Palestine to Iraq, Syria to Ukraine, there's war and unrest. And we have trouble in this country, too, in places like New York and Ohio and Ferguson, Missouri. 20 days ago, Michael Brown was shot and killed in Ferguson. The story has been told so many times since then, in many different ways. Another unarmed black teenager killed, a justified police shooting, looting and rioting, the police invading the streets with military-grade weapons. We've heard the backlash and the defensiveness, alongside the grief and disbelief. Michael Brown has had his teenage mistakes and missteps analyzed and held up to the light to see if they are justification for his killing. And now, weeks later, after the protests and the investigations and the funeral, it's time for us, for all of us, to reflect, learn, and take action. First, we need to recognize that Michael Brown's death was not an isolated incident. In 2012, over 300 black people were killed by police, or to a lesser extent, security guards or vigilantes acting in the name of security. That's one killing every 28 hours. Since mid-July, at least 5 black men, including Michael Brown, were killed by police. Eric Gardner in New York, John Crawford III in Ohio, Azelle Ford and Dante Parker in California, and Kajim Powell of St. Louis, shot less than 2 weeks after and just a few miles away from where Michael Brown was killed. These numbers are hard to grapple with, I know. Here are some more numbers that might help put Ferguson into perspective. 4. The percent of law enforcement agencies that report any police-involved shootings to the FBI's database. That's just 700 out of a total of 17,000 law enforcement agencies. And even these agencies only record alleged justifiable homicides or incidents in which an armed suspect was shot by police. All in all, we're left with a reporting system that tells us very little about how many people are killed by police, and nothing about those who may have been killed in an unjust fashion. 24. That's the percentage of young black men who report being treated unfairly by police in the past 30 days, according to a Gallup poll. Or how about 50? The percentage of Americans who believe that police officers generally aren't held accountable for misconduct, according to another poll. Or finally, 1 in 3. The number of black men who can expect to go to prison at some point in their lifetimes, compared to 1 in 17 for white men. The picture these numbers paint is one we should all be aware of by now. So, secondly, now is the time to bear witness to the reality of racial profiling, massive racial disparities in our criminal justice system, and the long histories of slavery, poverty, exclusion, and suppression that have led us as a country to this point. It may be easy in Montana to pretend this problem isn't ours, but let's ask ourselves, if a young black man was walking alone down the street in our neighborhood, would he feel safe? Or would he feel like he was a target for police, for private security, or for citizens with guns? So, finally, we must take action. What can we do from here in Montana? A lot, as it turns out. We can educate ourselves about the specifics of situations like the one in Ferguson and the local history and conditions that have led to it. We can support organizations, both local and national, that work to address issues like police brutality, racial profiling, poverty, and more. We can talk to our kids about what's happening, why it's happening, and what our role is in it. And we can talk to our elected officials, especially those at the federal level, about policy solutions to police brutality, the kind of weaponry available to local police forces, and the larger issues, such as education disparities and poverty, that are underlying forces. I hope, as summer draws to a close, that instead of seeing the events in Ferguson and around the country and the world fade out of view, we will move forward with renewed commitment to addressing not just the problems, but the solutions ahead. I'm Sarah Howell with Montana Women Vote. Thanks for listening, and have a terrific weekend.
Sarah Howell is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Christopher Allen.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.